All
All
right.
right, it's 7. So welcome everybody. Our guest tonight, our presenter tonight is Bonnie Burkhart. Bonnie is famous for writing this book. She knows all about all the nonsense that ICAC does and basically all the bullshit that cops somehow get away with. I don't know how they get away with it. But she knows, I don't remember what you call the thing that you do where you like figure out how to like what you're allowed to tap, who you're allowed to wiretap and who you're not allowed to wiretap and what the rules are. So you're just like an expert on understanding what the law says about how to basically wiretap. And so she really understands that the cops are breaking the law. That's what this whole book's about. So welcome, Bonnie. Come
Hello.
on, come on in.
Thank you all for having me. I appreciate it. It's great to be chatting with all of you. I'm going to go through my presentation. This is a presentation that I gave at the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers for a class for them. So the attorneys have gotten credit for listening to me.
Oh.
I've trained, I think I totaled 600 lawyers across the country so far on this material. And a few of them have hired me to assist. And we're starting to get a little bit of success, but it's extremely small. There's no real rulings on it. It's just like the prosecutor said, oh crap, time out. All right, we're going to reduce the charges. So that is a win because they got rid of anything that had to do with the child, and just said, you offered money to an adult. Okay, we'll just do that as a misdemeanor. So all the fact that they were impersonating and all that that I'm going to talk about, that we're starting to get a little bit of success. So, but it is extremely slow. All right, let me go and I will try to get the full screen here going from the beginning. All right, can you see the full screen?
No.
Oh, and I forgot to ask you, do you want people to wait till you're done talking to raise their hand and ask questions, or can people raise hand during the conversation? Because if they need to wait till the end, my recommendation, everybody, is type your question in the chat so that, as you're thinking of the question, you say the question, and then later we will answer the question.
Tell you what, I have a couple of sections. So why don't we pause at the sections? Okay, because I have one on just general law, another one on impersonating other people, and then I go into wiretapping, and then I go into planting evidence. Okay.
Okay, so at the end of the sections, if they want to raise their hand, they can raise their
Yeah,
hand.
how about that? And
Perfect. That's
I'll
perfect.
want to make sure we get through all of it. So I'll take quick questions then, and then at the end I'll help you out. Okay. I don't seem to be able to get the full screen going, so hopefully you don't mind seeing the little banners also. Unless somebody knows which button I should press. Just
That would be
because
a tough
if
question.
I said from the beginning it didn't quite work right. All right, let me go on. That's my contact information if you want it. I got an actual book award for this club, which I did not expect. The Warren Johansson Book Award. So that was for advocacy for violating people's rights. And so that was
Oh.
very awesome, very unexpected. I want to thank them for it. I am an engineer, not an attorney, so I do not give legal advice. So whenever I say go talk to an attorney, if I don't say that, I get in trouble. Okay. So this is what I'm going to talk about, the actual laws themselves. Then I'm going to get into solicitation of a minor crimes, the stings and how they're conducted and then how they actually violate the law. Then I'm going to get into the investigations for child pornography, which is boils down to wiretapping. They're wiretapping everything, emails, peer-to-peer networks, they're wiretapping everything, all without a warrant. Then I'll do a touch a little bit on how they unmask people's online identity and then planting evidence. And now they're using these techniques to not only frame people for sex crimes, they're framing people for capital murder. So what they're doing here, they're actually expanding the tactics and taking people out. So I'm going to start on Fourth Amendment laws. The modern version of the interception law, because wiretapping is just tapping a wire is just one of the methods of intercepting private communications because you can't wiretap a wireless phone. So technically it's interception law. And the modern version started back in 1981 with electronic surveillance. And I underline important words through this that I want you to pay attention to. Electronic surveillance is the acquisition of private communication by electronic means without the consent of a person who is a party to the communication, or for face-to-face ones, it's who without the consent of a person who is visibly present at the place of communication. Okay. And the meaning of person is a person who is born alive, a human being. And you wouldn't think you have to harp on that, but when you're dealing with all these sting operations and wiretapping stuff, you have to understand the meaning of a person. It must be a person who is party to the conversation, who grants permission to record it. Okay. And this executive order has to be followed by the FBI. It's one of the governing authorities, just like the law. So let's go on. Here's the law. You have the modernization of the wiretap law occurred in 1986. ICAC was invented 12 years later. They have no excuse for not knowing the law. Okay, the interception law, which is handles real-time, essentially real-time communications, telephone, email, texting, email, things like that, private messaging on dating apps. Then you have pen register laws, which has dialing, routing, addressing, like unmasking identities and figuring out who called whom. And then you had stored communication law, which is wiretapping things that are stored. Okay. And here's the law. And I'm going to read it to you because I'm going to harp on it. And the first one is anyone who intercepts or endeavors to intercept or procures another person to intercept or endeavor to intercept any wire, electronic, or oral communication commits a crime. And many states echo this in their state law. Item number C is anyone who discloses the content knowing that they were intercepted like this also commits a crime. Anyone who uses it, the content, in any proceeding also commits a crime. So these C and D are directed—
So all the things they do.
Yep. So that last two are directed to the prosecutors and anybody who takes the stand to testify about this stuff. And B is using a recording device to get somebody's voice. And that doesn't happen often, but it does happen. So, but the main ones are A, C, and E, intercepting, using, or disclosing. Okay. Three federal crimes for each item that is obtained illegally. Okay. What is content? Content is anything that gives the substance, purport, or meaning of a communication. Like a recording, a text message, an email includes a subject line, any attachments to the email. And if you, a hash code, I'm going to talk about hash codes when I get to the wiretapping section. If they take the hash code and figure out what the hash code relates to, it'll give you the substance, purport, or meaning of what was transmitted on in an email or a peer-to-peer network transfer. Intercept simply means acquiring it. That's it. It doesn't mean you have to tap a wire. It just means acquiring the content. So there's exceptions to this. Number one, you get a warrant, which they never do. Or it shall not be unlawful for a person acting under color of law to intercept where such person is a party to the communication. Okay. The officer has to be a person who is a party. Now, this is important, and the same phrasing applies to people who aren't law enforcement. Notice, it shall not be unlawful for a person not acting under color of law to intercept where such person is a party to the communication. So what applies to the goose is good for the gander. So if it's good for police, it's good for general public. If it's not good for general public, it's not good for the police. That's what this boils down to. And you have to be a person, not an imposter. So I'm going to get into this. Now, here's the first, any questions on the law, first of all? Otherwise, I'm going to get into—
Now, some states have two-party recording rules, but this law just acted like just one party saying okay would be enough?
Right. This is the federal, and okay. States can be more restrictive than this. So I'm using this as a baseline because this is the most lenient, and states can be more restrictive. They cannot be more lenient. Okay. So, and you have to be a person party to it to be one person party. Okay. You can't be an imposter. That doesn't qualify as a person.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah. So here is a solicitation of a minor is what I'm going to tackle first. Okay. This is not a male officer and it is not a child. It was advertised on an adult website, adult only website. You must be 21 or older. And it says just gone into, and some of them are even advertised with an adult age of age 19. You can see it at Can you see my little cursor there? Okay, age 19. So some of them are even advertised as an adult. This is now a male officer posted this ad. And here you have, are they pimping other officers? This was on the picture, the pictures on the left was Lily taken in about 2008 or a little smidge earlier. And then you have a 10 year later photo. Do they look like the same person? It does to me, considering she was the only lady cadet in the area when they where they took the photo, and she advertised that. But she claims it's not hers, so I'll give her the benefit of the doubt. But they get a, this is one of the things they do. There's four flavors of this crime, of soliciting of a minor scheme. First, they use an imaginary person called Lily, like you saw in the previous picture, where they said, oh, it was a geomorph. It was edited by computers using the eyes of one and the mouth of another, and we morph it. Well, that does happen. You can create photos online, imaginary AI photos, but that technology didn't exist back then, but I'm going to use it as an example. The other one is impersonating an actual adult and then claiming you're underage. The third one is if a parent reports some suspicious activity on their child's phone or teen's phone, then they give permission for the officer to take control of the phone and impersonate the kid. And lastly, FBI agents love to impersonate an adult who's pimping their child. All right, so there's four scenarios here. I'm going to go through them. First, here we have Lily. Lily apparently does not exist, okay, even though I think otherwise. She is a geomorph, supposedly, with the eyes of one and then mouth of another. And then you have a male detective impersonating her, creating, and they actually in the training manuals have cheat sheets for keeping track of their menstrual cycles, men, okay? Menstrual cycles, bra sizes, and panty sizes to make their story consistent. Then they use entrapment to manufacture the crime and claim to be underage. Now, here we have the definition of person. Lily, if she's computer generated, she has no birth certificate. She's imaginary. She is a cartoon. Cartoons cannot, are not a person. They cannot grant permission to intercept communications, okay? Next, we have an adult. Here you have one person in the photo, one a young officer. Then you have two other people impersonating him. Detective B, I'll call him, impersonated him with the text messages on an adult-only dating site, Grindr. And then you had another one who said, who played the voice actor on recorded phone calls. So then you have, there's, here you have three birth certificates, three actual humans trying to create a imaginary character called Alex VA. You have three birth certificates. That's not a person. That is three people. Sometimes they even switch off, hand off their phone to another officer if they go on vacation for the weekend to impersonate. That's not a person. But if you look close to the photo, this kid supposedly has a pretty serious 5 o'clock shadow and a good Adam's apple and does not look like a child. Then you have the scenario where a parent finds something suspicious. They sign a written consent form provided by the FBI or by the state or local, a consent to assume online identity. But there's nothing in the law. I just read the law to you. There was nothing in the law that says if you get written permission, you can impersonate somebody else and intercept their communication. But they actually admit this in the arrest warrants by saying it wasn't the kid. It was an undercover operation with an alleged 14-year-old. So they admit they impersonated and then it was an imposter. Where else is an imposter a lawful person under the law? Okay, then the last fourth scenario is an FBI agent impersonating a mom. This is a male man, well, a mailman, a male office agent impersonating a woman who on an adult-only dating site using this picture and then pretending to be a kid also. So he's not only a mother, but also a kid. And the guy who was talking said, was trying to talk to the one and only one to date the mother, but then it has to be a twofer. The woman refuses to show up unless the kid can tag along. And then the conversations about the kid was completely wrong because the wrong school run dates and I'll be home as soon as school lets, I'll call you when school lets out. And 2 minutes after school lets out, he says, hi, I'm home. So none of it made sense. And there's a case here that US v. Pullman's that says this is all these scenarios are complete entrapment. and cannot be used. But everybody ignores the, you know, federal court ruling. This is entrapment. They actually teach people, the defendants, how to commit the crime because they're too dumb to commit the crime themselves. Send me a video. I don't know how. Well, you do it this way. Use Dropbox. And then the officer gives instructions. Put your picture here, click here, copy and paste the link. If this is entrapment, I don't know what it is. Okay. Now, the legal definitions are important. A person is in the executive order as a human being. Here we have impersonation or imposter as somebody pretending to be somebody else to try to deceive others. Now, a persona is an officer wearing a disguise or, you know, using a, you know, I'm a guy, you want to have a good time, you know, that is a persona. It is not a picture of somebody else that you're impersonating. But they use investigative persona lots of times to snooker the judges into believing that it's this all is legal. If they use the word imposter, they'd say, oh, maybe you that doesn't work. But they use investigative persona as the word. And here's some rulings. Ashcroft says statutes can only be applied to images of real children, not computer generated, and an image that is or appears to be of a minor were overbroad and may not include the exploitation of real children. So that applies to all these cases, you know, or especially solicitation ones, because if you have an adult, it's not a real child. Now, the federal law says you must be a minor is someone who has not achieved the age of 18, but apparently somebody complained because they were getting sentenced for this for a fake child. So the Sentencing Commission decided to change the statute, to change the sentencing guidelines. I shouldn't say the statute has not changed. So they added the section in blue, which is beyond the law. And now with the other latest ruling that came out, Chevron ruling, this should be a lot of these be thrown out because an individual, whether fictitious or not, or an undercover officer who pretends to be under 18 were added by the Sentencing Commission, but they are not in the law. Suppression of evidence. You can't use illegally obtained evidence in court. It's actually one of the statutes, and it is two Supreme Court rulings, both Silverthorne and Wong Sung v. U.S. But as in Virginia, they cherry pick the words of the law. Virginia law is identical, essentially identical to federal. And to get the outcome they wanted, they said, oh, yeah, the law says this, but Payne, the officer, was, and then they start to quote the law, a person who was party to the communication, so he didn't violate the code. The law says you must be such person who is a party, but they said he was a person party to the communication, so they could get the outcome they wanted. So they twist the law, cherry pick it. Executive Order 12333 also plays in because imposters and imaginary people cannot be lawful parties because they cannot be visibly present. You must be a person who not only is party to the communication, but you must be able to be visibly present. The meaning of person doesn't change in the the wording of the executive order. You have to be either party to electronic communication or the person is visibly present for a live conversation. If you're wearing a disguise, that's okay. But if you're an imposter, you know, imaginary people can't show up. Here you have the actual form, the FBI form, a consent to assume online identity form. Nope, nothing in the law makes this form legal. It's like getting written permission. They get parents to sign this, but it's like getting a written permission from your mother to go rob a bank. It doesn't make it legal. And sometimes photos are even used without consent. They just grab them off the internet. Think about that for your daughters, okay? Sometimes phone calls are recorded. They procure voice actors to be the voice of the character on a recorded phone call. Also be careful of videos because if you record this is another crime. This is the one that's not that I mentioned that is doesn't happen often, but using an interception device to record a conversation where you are not such person who is a party is an additional crime. And if they record a video, that also has an audio component to it. So that also comes to play here. That's why all the surveillance cameras don't have sound on them because they would violate this particular law. Endeavoring to intercept. This is the first crime in all of these scenarios that I have seen that is violated. The officers post an ad, which fully intending to impersonate the character they have posted the ad for. So that is endeavoring to intercept. Or they get a parent to sign the form, and then they intend to impersonate the kid using the kid's cell phone. That is all endeavoring to intercept, and that's first crime committed in these scenarios. It's also federal identity theft, probably not state, but it is federal. Anyone who violates, who uses someone else's identity without lawful authority, and the means of identification in connection with any unlawful activity, commits federal identity theft. And this can all mean using somebody else's phone number, their email account, or their photo. All of them are somebody else's identity because you are known by your phone number. It's also a possible Giglio violation because these violate the terms of use for the dating apps. And it is computer fraud and abuse. If you are not do not abide by the user agreement, which says you can't pimp children and you must be an adult, you are violating their user agreement. You are an illegal user because even in criminal law, a user must be granted authority by the service provider to use their service. Well, if you're violating it, you are not in compliance and you are therefore a criminal user of the dating app or whatever it may be. Legal authorization, in order to intercept, you have to get court authorization before you start. And in states like Virginia, it can only be granted for kidnapping, murder, extortion, and bribery. It cannot be granted for soliciting a minor. So some states may have that. If you get it, you can only do it for 30 days. This only means recording. It does not mean sending out messages. Because if you send out text messages, you are manufacturing evidence because that a child did not send it. An officer did and manufactured this evidence, putting it into the communication stream. Okay. Now, at the federal level, they charge the people with 18 U.S. Code 2422, coercion and enticement. They charge them with item B, which is inducing someone, an individual who's not attained the age of 18 to engage in prostitution or sex. Well, here you've got a fake person, okay? It is not an individual who's has not aged because fake people do not age. They're the same age. One guy used the same character for 20 years. Totally, you know, if the same person is 14 years old for 20 years and they're still 14 years old, they're not a real person. But technically, it's the officers that are causing, violating item number A, causing or inducing the suspect, the defendant, to induce or entice, coerce the individual to travel, to engage in some sexual activity where the person could be charged with a criminal offense. The officers are actually violating item number A, yet they're charging the defendant with item number B, from what I can see. Okay, I'm gonna pause here for the solicitation, see if you have any questions before I get into wiretapping.
Okay, so there were a couple questions. Richard asks, what is the federal court ruling that was referenced for the entrapment?
Pohlman, P-O-E-H-L-M-A-N.
Okay.
Just be Pohlman. I can't find it right now. So
that's fine. Pohlman. Okay. And then can you address the issue of qualified immunity for police officers, which allows them to break the law?
Oh, that's a loaded question because qualified immunity is you have to be acting in good faith that you are you know, from my understanding, okay, qualified immunity says that if you're acting in good faith and doing things legally and lawfully and you make a mistake and accidentally shoot someone, you get qualified immunity. Here, they are intentionally planning a criminal act from the get-go and endeavoring to intercept by placing the ad. So I don't believe qualified immunity
would work
applies for that reason, because it is a scheme that they're doing to get money. Okay. Grant.
Okay. John S. has his hand up. And then Richard asked a question. I don't know if this is related to this. Is anyone helping with the case Michigan versus Janiel Ravinda Jade that's going to the Michigan State Supreme Court?
No clue. And if they didn't bring this up in the lower court, you can't bring it up now.
Okay. And then is anyone making the Chevron defense regarding the sentencing commission broadening the statute?
I haven't, that's been a recent decision and I haven't seen it used yet because these, getting on board with these cases. Like, I've only been worked like less than a dozen cases. Okay. So for me to get it out there in this amount of time, and that's, there has been enough time to do that and apply it.
Yep. No. No one's complaining. We love your work. Okay, John, I'm going to unmute you.
Yeah, Bonnie, good evening. Are you going to address in a little bit more detail the uses of coercion and duress, if you will, as well as to talk a little bit more about the growing elephant in the room, the use of AI in these cases, in these entrapments?
I won't address coercion and entrapment. I'm going to leave that to an attorney. Okay. For AI, I have actually worked with some congressmen, gentlemen in Southern Florida, because they are starting to use AI to impersonate politicians to get them to say and do things and claim it's on the record. So they're getting more interested in it. But you have this imaginary person, and whether that's the whole meaning of the word person, an AI person is not a human being who has not achieved the age of 18. Okay. So I'm going to leave it at that and get to some, if that satisfies it. Otherwise, I'm going to talk offline. Okay. All right. Any other questions before I get into wiretapping? Okay. Wiretapping without a warrant. Before I get into it, I have to give you an intro for how wiretapping works. All right. Everything is based on hash codes. And if you haven't heard about hash codes, you're going to be sick about hearing about them by the time you're done. But then you'll say, aha. Okay. I hope you get an aha moment. I'm an engineer. I'm a software engineer. I started building communication systems and writing hash codes. Hash codes are used to, a hash code is just a formula to add up all the bytes in your communication, and out pops a number. And then you ship it along with the sum, and you apply the same formula. And if they match, great, your communication got there. And if they don't match, you say, error, please retransmit. That's what the hash code is for. And there's, you know, big ones, little ones, fancy ones, you know, everybody's got their own, can have their own flavor of a hash code, but every communication has a hash code on it, a text message. How many of you have seen the hash code associated with an email you sent? How about a text message? How about a voice? Do you know that there's hash codes there? They are not displayed to users, okay? Not seen, but they are there. They just, they don't tell you anything about what's in the message, only that the bytes got there. And the communication protocol does not care what the bytes are. It could be a file, it could be a spreadsheet, it could be tax forms. It could be, a text message. Okay, this is what happens when you transmit an image. And this is like a child pornography image, but I've got a little puppy dog. If it's too big, they chop it up into pieces because you cannot fit a watermelon through a garden hose. You have to chop it up in pieces, ship them. And then once it gets to the end, you can reassemble them and voila, you get a full watermelon or puppy dog. So here is a puppy dog cut into pieces for shipment because the small pieces are able to be shipped. And sometimes there's thousands of pieces. Each piece has its own hash code. So I've got some samples here. The head is hash code 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The front paws has 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And then you've got the tail piece. Now, the problem is that the police have an entire database of all these pictures they consider suspicious and all the pieces and the hash codes for all the pieces. So here you have something being transmitted with a hash code. So they extract the hash code from the communication, cross-reference it with this database in order to get content. Well, when you cross-reference it, you're getting the substance, purport, or meaning of what was transmitted. And that is content, and you're obtaining content, and they don't have a warrant. Just a little side note here, these hash codes are not completely unique. They're not like driver's licenses you can get duplicates of two totally different files having the same one. It's extremely rare, but it does happen. So first I'm going to talk about wiretapping email. I got three categories of wiretapping here. So this is Yahoo, Gmail, Dropbox, Apple, Snapchat. I have cases for all of these. They are all in cahoots with NCMEC, National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. I'm not going to say that big thing again. So NCMEC. So they're in cahoots. Now this is prohibited by the interception law, because service providers These are service providers that are wiretapping their own product, own communications that they service for the benefit of the government. And service providers can't do that. They can only do what is necessary for the rendition of their service. And for wire communications, they cannot to the communications to the public. So anyone who provides private communications systems to the public, that's the big caveat, can only do what is necessary and cannot use any service observing, and they can only do random monitoring except for mechanical or quality control checks. So they cannot monitor for content or anything else. Telephone companies cannot listen to your phone calls. They can't check for the example I gave, okay, that I gave to the attorney is that it had to do with my daughter when she was in college. She had a very difficult lab in the evening and was very worried about an upcoming exam. So she sent me this text message saying, I'm going to bomb the lab tonight. Now, if you just took that statement by itself, you'd say, well, this is pretty nefarious. You know, I should report it to the FBI. She should be arrested for bombing the lab. But it was out of context because she was taking an exam. She was thought she'd do that. But that is a private communication, and you cannot search text messages for the word bomb just to report it to the FBI. Now, if she sent it in a phone call, you can't like record the phone call and do voice to text and listen for the word bomb or do the same thing. So you cannot do it for voice. You can't do a text. And if she put the same thing in an email, it's a private email to me. You cannot monitor the content in email for the word bomb. And she can't write a sign and say, I'm going to bomb the lab tonight and make a video or a picture of herself with that sign and send it to me in an email, as an attachment, or on a peer-to-peer network to her mother, because that is a private communication. So you can't monitor for content of the word bomb, no matter how it's sent in a private communication. And that's what they're doing here. It doesn't matter if it's child pornography or the word bomb, it's protected. You have a right to privacy, and service providers, phone call companies cannot monitor this. And they were around when ECPA was passed. Now, these other companies came around a decade later. Apparently, they didn't get the message. They can't do this either, yet they are doing it. And the hash codes are going to your phone, but the phone companies do not make these reports. It's the email companies that are doing it. I don't have an opinion on this matter, so you can tell in my voice. Okay. 18 U.S. Code 2552, reporting requirements. This is a law that for service providers requiring them to report things to NCMEC, but it has a clause in there, item F. Nothing in this section shall be required to require a provider to monitor any user or customer, monitor for any content, or affirmatively search, screen, or scan for additional facts described in the above, either the subscriber or the content. It is prohibited in the reporting law because this was written a decade or so after ECPA, and they are honoring the prior law that says you can't wiretap. All right. That's not stopping Yahoo and Google and all those others. Okay. So I'm going to pick on Yahoo because I have the most information about that one. Hash codes alone were used to detect transmission. They're used to detect transmission errors, but Yahoo by itself does not know what that hash code means. All it knows is the bytes got there. So on the front page of these NCMEC reports says the word hash match. Well, everything otherwise successfully has a hash match. So what are they matching the hash code to? There apparently is a list of specific hashes that are of interest to the government. And who makes that list? Who maintains the list? Who decides what's of interest and what's not of interest? Apparently NCMEC, which is a nonprofit organization not managed by the government. It's not the FBI. It's not the CIA or NSA or any of the other three-letter agencies. It's a nonprofit, for Pete's sake, with no congressional oversight. This nonprofit determines what's of interest and apparently ships this list out to all the companies that blindly search for these hash codes. It could be a politician's flyer. It could be a pro-life, pro-abortion flyer. The companies don't even know what they're hunting for because by law, they cannot store child porn. So they blindly hunt for the hash codes. Okay. Then Yahoo sent a supplemental report where they are they handed the entire account, once it was flagged with a hash code, sent it to the investigative team that then read the emails, looked at all the pictures, identified that his driver's license was in there, copied this information onto a supplemental report to say, this is the guy that's our customer, looked him up in TLO, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and did all this investigative work to be nice. Looked up, and then they handed it to NCMEC. NCMEC did not validate that this data was lawfully obtained. They went and then used it and disclosed it, which are all crimes, okay? And did additional searching on who is to geolocate them so they could properly inform the local police, and did TraceRoute. Well, pen registers, when we get into pen registers, TraceRoute traces the route an IP that an electronic communication takes, you know, what place nodes it went hopping through, and that's all protected under law. And they're doing all this without a warrant. And getting an IP address requires a pen register law. Getting routing information, decoding all this information, all requires a warrant, and they don't get any warrants, okay? Other things, Microsoft DNA, they do AI fuzzy matches. This is a little scary because I've seen pictures of dolls. I've seen pictures of all kinds of other things that, you know, if you look at a young looking lady, you don't know if she is 18, 16, 17. So they do fuzzy matches. And then they provide, we're so nice. We're going to provide this to NCMEC. Look at all these hash codes we found that you should add to your storage. Apple actually has their own hash code calculator, and they would, the government would, or NCMEC would not provide them the images to run the algorithm on. So they had to provide the government the algorithm. And in return, the government gave them the list of things to hunt for. Where's the control on that one? There's no warrant based on probable cause to put anything in there. And then they finally canceled that program, but people are still sitting in jail for it. Okay. Quantity of wiretapping. Okay. I did the math. Okay. I'm a math person. So I looked to report number one and report number two, did a difference of the report numbers and the amount of time that between report number one and report number two, and came up with 41,000 reports per day are filed with NCMEC. On an average, each report has 500 illegally intercepted things in it. So let's add that up over a year, and you're getting into the billions of things wiretapped per year. And these are only the ones that are reported. Everything that is intercepted and checked against this list is a crime. Google, on their website, says that they filed 870,000 reports in 1 year. That is over 2,000 reports a day, and that's only about 6% of the total of 41,000 reports filed. So from my estimates, so you need about 17 companies the size of Google to file that many reports. So if you have smaller companies, you need more of them. So that's how many companies seem to be participating in this. And Google was so generous. They contributed 2 million hashes to NCMEC. Who looks at this? Some high school kid? You know, who determines what is a child and what is a doll, what is an AI artwork, or what is a medical journal, or what is a relative? This is my kid in the bathtub. Oh, that's child porn. Phone companies cannot do this because I worked for General Telephone Electronics for a decade to start my career when the Electronic Communication and Privacy Act was passed, by the way. I started working in 84. It was passed in 86. But Google puts these little caveats in there. We collect the content you create, upload. This includes things you email. We analyze your content to help us detect abuse, malware, and illegal content. Okay. Well, detecting a virus attached to a photo is different than determining what the photo contains. All right. So either this is over broadly written, or it's over broadly interpreted. We may review your content to see if it follows our policies and procedures. Well, if somebody complains, you know, files a complaint, I can see that. If it's a public posting, of course, then you don't have a right to privacy for posting something on a public forum. But these are private emails, and they have different rules than public postings. People are in jail for photos of their girlfriend that they legally can have sex with, and they just took a picture to commemorate the event, and they're spending a decade in federal prison for that. They're spending one gentleman is in prison because his common law wife sent a picture of their kid, so he's in jail. Email is sent to political targets to take them out. That has happened on a couple of occasions. And then they stack charges in order to force you to sign a plea deal up to 900 years in prison. Oh, we'll reduce it to 300. Really? Okay. Any questions on that before I'm going to just take quick questions before I get into wiretapping peer-to-peer?
Someone asked, does the Patriot Act play into the surveillance of private communication?
Patriot Act, I believe, it has to have a foreign component to it. You must be a foreigner. And a Patriot Act, this is all US communications by people in the US considered a US person. So if you're on US soil or a US citizen or even in an embassy overseas or on a US ship, you're considered a US person and under protected by Fourth Amendment law.
Okay.
Okay. I'll charge forward with peer-to-peer networks. This is this type of wiretapping is by custom products purchased by the government and contracted by built by the government under contract with Amherst University of Massachusetts and Amherst, Massachusetts. This wiretapping is for Shiraz Emule Edonki. First of all, what is a peer-to-peer service? They transfer large quantities that might be shared or distributed to multiple people. It's free. It's labor. All of these products are layered on BitTorrent protocol. It's like different cars on the road. They all use the same road, but you could have a Volkswagen, a van, or whatever. They have a different user interface, but they all use the same underlying protocol, the same road. The service provider takes the copies from your neighbor, and Microsoft Windows 10 actually uses this protocol to, by default, to deliver Windows 10 to users when you get updates. So all your updates don't come from Seattle. They get distributed to, say, me here in Springfield. And then if my neighbor needs it, he's going to copy it from Microsoft is going to control copying it from my computer to my neighbor. And then if another person in the next town need it, they'll copy like half of it from my computer and half of it from my neighbor's computer instead of shipping it all the way from Seattle. So that's why it was kind of invented, is to cut down on network traffic. Software people are just kind of naively, well, they're just naive. Oh, let's feel good, feel kumbaya. Nobody wants to do anything bad with this stuff. We just need to be kumbaya and share stuff. Now, this is an actual officer's testimony, and I underline words that I want you to pay attention to. He said, well, using in conducting an op undercover operation using law enforcement tools, I saw an IP address. They've been notified by our tools to have child porn. I then downloaded it using Shiraz LE. It's only for law enforcement. Once I was able to get the files, I utilized the system to identify the subscriber to the IP address. I then contacted the local jurisdiction and coordinated from there. Okay, this is sworn testimony. He continued, other than the automated database, what brought your attention to this IP address? And he answered, by the database. And how did you know the files you encountered related to child exploitation? By the names attached to them, along with the fact that we had similar files in our core system. Okay. Additional question. So prior to getting the search warrant, you had a partial download of the file from the guy's computer. Yes, ma'am. From this IP address? Yes, ma'am. Did they download? Then they double check that. When did the download of the two files occur? Was it before or after you executed the search warrant? It was before. I read this transcript and my jaw went on the ground because nobody in the courtroom said anything. Not the defense, not the prosecutor, not the judge. Nobody said a word. This was perfectly acceptable to break into somebody's computer and steal their files without a search warrant. Let's continue. So, where did the IP address come from? These are questions that I'm bringing up. Why was this IP address selected? How did the officer access a password-protected computer? Okay, what system did he use to identify the suspect, and how did he figure out where he was located to identify police, the proper police department? Now, these are some confessions, and I want to translate these words into because they like to use pretty words. Excuse me. Access someone's computer means they broke into it. Download means they are stealing copies of your files. The core systems means that they have a law enforcement only version of child porn with hash codes that they're cross-referencing. And it also probably means they're submitting administrative subpoenas based on illegally obtained data instead of getting a warrant. And by saying that they have a local jurisdiction, they have geolocated the suspect without a warrant, at least partially. And law enforcement only means it's not publicly available. And this is a legal term that is very relevant to the law as to whether or not you need a warrant. Okay, the DNI, Department of National, DNI, I forget what that means. Okay, Director of National Intelligence. Okay, on the Civil Liberties and Privacy Guidance for Intelligence Community Professionals says that information must be available to any member of the general public in order for it to be publicly available. Okay, if you need law enforcement only tools, it's not publicly available. All right. So I went, being an engineer, I reverse engineered this stuff to see, you know, all this data is popping up. The officer's talking about it. Where did it come from? It doesn't just float down from the sky and land on the guy's officer's lap. You have to, an engineer like me has to go write software and go get it and then show it to the officer. So where did it come from? So I looked into the design and here's the torrent file. It's like a table of contents for each file. It has a file name, list of all the pieces, the hash codes for each piece, and the web address, the tracker. And the tracker file keeps track of who downloaded each piece so they know where to get it in order to satisfy the next request. So if you access a stored communication system for some purpose other than what is it intended, you're exceeding your authority to access it, and therefore you are committing a crime. So breaking into the bookkeeping files is a crime. Stealing, decoding it is a crime. Breaking into the user's computer is a crime, and inventorying the person's private computer from file listings is a crime. So here I have it: stealing transactional records, looking for IP addresses, and this apparently is run periodically. And anything new that is collected generates an alert to the officers. Here's a picture of the software. You say, oh. And look up in the upper left-hand corner. It's now run by Homeland Security, Child Protective Systems. And I'm going to go over each of these pieces so you can see it. And it confirms the officer's testimony. Here is pick what you want to wiretap today. Okay, here it's got all the data categorized and by content. Okay, so that means you had to obtain the content. And you didn't have any warrant to do it. So you're putting it up on the screen with the content categorized and you didn't have any warrant to do this. And notice there's a couple things that I've flagged that are not even illegal content. You know, Playboy is adult erotic, but it's legal if you're of age, yet they're wiretapping it. Okay, here's a list of the IP addresses and they're geolocated to a town. All done in the little tool. And here's the time, scene, and the GUID is the global unique identifier. The product used, you can sort it by geographic area. So you can get what's something that's in your area so you can go arrest somebody. Now notice that the person is not party to the conversation. The software is wiretapping all this stuff. It's not a person. Okay, the ICOPS database, it's sometimes what it's been referred to in cases. Bookkeeping files are used to inventory the content downloaded, and that includes all the things here, file names, IP addresses, dates and times, and you can see that on the screen. And the hash codes, they cross-reference them to see what the content was and put it up on a nice little pretty pie chart. Then they remotely break into people's computers and steal their content without a warrant. But the location of evidence is what determines whether or not a warrant is required. You have the tracker files and you have the file pieces. All that requires a warrant. Shiraz LE is a law enforcement only. It's like a skeleton key and it breaks into any computer that has the BitTorrent items and it allows you them backdoor access. So they bypass your username and password and they go in claiming to be Shiraz, but they're not. They're Shiraz LE. And it allows two-way access. They can download files, take content, and they actually, I have not seen this happen, but they can actually remotely plant evidence on your computer. I don't know if that's been built into the software, but technically, if Shiraze is a two-way transfer. So this type of software is considered a computer contaminant. The state laws govern this stuff. So look at check your state. Anyone who introduces a contaminant into a computer network that is allows unauthorized access to somebody else's computer is committing a state crime. And Virginia is considered computer trespass. Other problems, mistakes can never be downloaded because these bookkeeping files are not kept on the user's computer. You can wipe your computer clean and bleach bit it and all that other stuff, and the bookkeeping files are elsewhere. So they will always know that at one point in time you accidentally download something. There's no control over equipment. Officers take it home, they carry it to another state, and there's no logging of when what they type into a computer. No date and time, nothing. And I've, in systems I've worked, there is bookkeeping like you wouldn't believe as to who requested what was downloaded, what was time, all this other stuff. There's nothing. It is a total free-for-all, uncontrolled, untracked with law enforcement. I can't, it's just appalling. We're still approaching almost the 9 o'clock mark, so I'm going to go through the wiretapping freenet here if you don't mind, unless somebody's got a real pressing question. Any real quick questions?
I haven't seen any quick questions.
Okay.
I mean, there are some, but they can wait.
All right. Wiretapping freenet. Freenet is a slightly different animal. It is a normal freenet. It takes the file, it breaks it into about 1,000 pieces, but then it disperses it to the wind over all the computers on the network, up to 18 hops away. It's a you have friends and they have friends and friends of friends, and the pieces just get scattered to the wind. And then when you want a piece back, you have your table of contents, and you tell the software, okay, I want my p file back, and then it sends out requests to recall all the pieces from all the other computers where the pieces are stored. Because so. When using Freenet, you allow Freenet a piece of your disk space to store whatever it wants. And you have no control over what is passed through your computer en route to another one or what comes back through your computer upon satisfying a request. So you have the person who's originally storing it, and then everybody else is kind of like an intermediate node that's shipping these pieces around the network. So, but you have no control over that. And a computer owner does not know what pieces are going through their computer en route to somebody else. So the law enforcement version of Freenet doesn't store files. It doesn't retrieve files. It does nothing. All it does there is sit and wiretap the network and monitor the network content. It captures all the requests and analyzes them. It just sucks. And that I swore I went and testified on a case like this. All it does is suck the data off the network and port to law enforcement. It's pure and simple, a customized wiretap box. It taps into the network without a warrant. It monitors the network traffic that is carried over an internet wire and extracts and logs about 100 or 500,000 items per day per computer. And this is what it, there's a list of things it extracts. And every night, apparently, it ships it to Black Ice, okay, which apparently is a mothership, which was originally in Salem, Mass, Missouri. Okay, I've got the user manual, or one of the manuals for it. It has databases that keeps track of all the manifest, which is the table of contents, all the hashes, all the IP addresses, and it then apparently this Black Ice then has the ability to cross-reference these hash codes and get content as to what was transmitted. And all this stuff is encrypted, but they have the encrypted pieces and the hash codes for the encrypted pieces stored in this database. So even though it's encrypted, they can tell, like this cross-reference thing, what is in that piece. So here's like one of the screens, and you can see on here, look, he see here. This is my region, so the cop enters his territories where he can may legally make arrests and tell me what's of interest in my region. And the officer doesn't even know what whose computer actually was in contact with the defendants. He just logs into this database and says, "What's in my territory?" He is not even a person party to any conversation. He's just looking at the reports that have been stored. And that's sworn testimony by an officer saying he didn't know whose computer did it. He just checked by region. Okay, so He didn't say he used this screen, but everything he testified to matches what's on the screen. Okay, you cannot monitor communications. You can only do what is necessary for the rendition of service, and you cannot use, I'm repeating myself here, but this is wiretapping. It's wiretapping, plain and simple. Okay, and there's also a lack of intent to commit a crime because this is in the agreement of Freenet. Unlike other peer, you have little or no control over what is stored on your computer. How is there intent there if you have no control? Doesn't matter. They don't care. Still convicted. Okay. Any
the
questions?
People who are using these Freenet places, I mean, how do they not recognize that this could mean you're storing child porn? Because, you know, you maybe didn't ask for it, but if it gets stored in your computer, aren't you equally like, couldn't you be arrested?
Yeah, they are sitting in jail right now. And that's the case I testified for, because the jury did not care that this was illegally wiretapped. And the decision on what to include as evidence is decided out in days prior to the jury showing up. Okay, that's one of the problems. So the jury doesn't know that the evidence is tainted or believed to be tainted by the defense. So the judge makes a ruling and then you can't bring it up again in front of the jury. Okay, let me plow forward and get through this. So, once they get an IP address, then they unmask the identity of the anonymous person online. They use content of the chat that is illegally intercepted. They have no warrant to decode bookkeeping files. You need a pen register warrant to get IP addresses, or they use Dropbox to get an IP address. Because I was saying, why are they sending all these photos via Dropbox? Why aren't they just an attachment? It's because Dropbox lets you get the IP address of anybody who takes something out of your Dropbox. So they're using it as a pen register device. And then they use subpoenas instead of warrants. Okay, pen register. This is really getting into the weeds, but a pen register is any device or process that records or decodes the bytes of a file that they are using to store this stuff, or dialing or routing information or addressing. Well, an IP address is an address, an email address is an address. So if they get this stuff without a warrant, it's called a crime, but they don't care. They do it anyway. Okay, then administrative subpoenas instead of warrants. The law says a provider shall disclose the name, address, telephone, and IP address of a subscriber or a customer. It does not say, given an IP address, we'll disclose the customer. So they're reversing the words of the law in order to get what they want and to avoid getting a warrant. Okay, and then there's a bunch of court cases here that you need a warrant to get a phone number, email, geolocation, and stuff like that. I'll leave that. And you also have a right to remain anonymous. There's cases here. All right. I'm going to get into planning evidence a little bit. Okay. Once they get someone for soliciting a minor or for possession of child porn, if they don't have enough evidence, they plant it on the confiscated devices. And this happens quite a bit. They disconnect the computer from the internet, and all of you have a clock on your computer, right? And when you go to a different territory of the United States, you can change the time zone. Well, you can also set it to any time you want. You can set it back to Halloween. And if you set it back to Halloween, you can then, anything that happens on your computer is then timestamped with Halloween. So that's how they plant fake evidence on the computer, is set the clock back, put the stuff on it, and then turn the clock back forward, and voila. Look what happened on Halloween. Evidence planted. Okay. If you get a phone, they do a backup copy of your phone, and then they disconnect the phone and they set the clock back on the phone also, and then put the evidence in the phone. This evidence with the clock turned back. So then it can be text messages. It can be child porn. It can be geolocating you to the location of a murder. It can be text messages with the victim of the murder that didn't actually exist. All this can be done using Chinese software tools. Okay, so this is what Stephen Coker's uncovered. You back it up, they disconnect it, and they use it in device emulator to allow the officer to operate the phone. And then they reconnect it, and then they erase the defendant's phone and plant the contaminated copy back into the phone. Okay, planting evidence, it leaves traces, because the things like your personal photo is gone, your background photo, Files are dated after the arrest. Sometimes they turn the clock back so much that the clock is dated before the phone was actually manufactured. yeah, that happens. The sequel, I've got the some other items here. This is a spreadsheet of, there's a SQLite database of everything that's happened on your phone. And it's got a one-up number of, you know, first you sent a text message, then you did a phone call, then you looked at your Google search. All of it's by one-up number, okay? So this is sorted kind of in reverse order on the right-hand column there. And this is how you can tell the evidence is planted, because time should be increasing as you go from the bottom to the top. But look at this. It's July 20, 2020, 13th. They turned the clock back. 2020, 13, turned the clock back. 2020, 21, 20, 14. They turned the clock back again and planted evidence. Okay. I don't have much here in the summary, so I'm going to zip through this and then just open it up for general questions. From what I have seen, overseas terrorists have more protection than U.S. citizens. They are conducting comet operations. Now, let me read the definition of comet, because that's my business. Communications intelligence is information derived from, and then scratch the word foreign here. It's supposed to be foreign, but that's what they are doing here. Communications by other than the intended recipient, okay? Passed by radio, wire, or electronic means. So here you have the person in the picture for the solicitation crimes never received the messages. So they were intercepted by the police. Here you have them operating wiretap devices for to get child pornography. Again, not the intended recipient. Collection comprises search, interception, direction finding. Processing includes a couple things. Traffic analysis, which is what Freenet is. Crypto analysis, decryption, study of plain text. Fusion of all these report things and reporting. Common operation against U.S. citizens by the warrant. Okay, here it is. Oh, I read it to you. I did, forgot that it was actually on the slide. And it's just scratch the word foreign. You can see that that is what they're doing in both all of these cases. The innocent are serving time. It doesn't matter whose fingers are on the keyboard. It matters who owns the IP address. They do not track the MAC address, which is the serial number of your actual phone or computer. They only track IP addresses and the owner. So you have fathers in jail. You have a neighbor who has the only internet in town. You have computer repairmen in jail. Stack charges. Sign the plea deal, you get 100 more charges. No, so he got 100 more charges that afternoon. Another judge said, I'm up for election, so sign the plea deal or I will nail you. My estimate is 180,000 people have been manufactured into criminals or prosecuted using wiretapped information, and they should not be on the sex offender registry. Money, 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 $1 billion in federal grants matched at the state level. I have the entire list of federal grants too, by the way, that totals that number. Donations that people give. Oh, you must catch these terrible sex offenders. Really? And there's also rumors by a private investigator that officers get up to a $5,000 bonus called an equipment grant for each person they get on the registry. So there is a lot of money to be personally made for this. It's a multi-billion dollar industry, because that doesn't even take into account the amount of money for prosecution. I'm going to show you my little, I'm going to stop sharing that. I'm going to share something else, if that's all right. Mm-hmm. This is a flyer I distributed to Congress. Quick, one of the little interns, it was a he, didn't want to accept it because the picture was too risque. But it kind of summarizes everything that's going on. And this is the estimate of the $1 billion I just told you about. $3 billion a year is, you know, what I estimate for incarcerating people that shouldn't be there. And my estimate on how much money could be get if you issued fines. So
if you're saying, instead of prosecuting criminals and putting people in prison, if instead we started saying, hey, you're breaking the law there, and you're breaking the law there, and you're breaking the law over there, and you're breaking the law over there, we could earn more money finding the companies that are doing this illegal shit.
Right. And then that money, the $16 trillion that I say there, could be used to pay restitution for the people who shouldn't have been in jail in the first place.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and
then this is, then I had a little two-page letter in there saying that this is common operations. And I list some of the people that believe that they were sent child porn. Okay. I'm going to
stop. So you and Steven took this two-pager up to Capitol Hill a couple
Well,
weeks ago.
Stephen's in Alabama.
Okay, so you took the
I'm
thing.
20 miles from DC, so I took it up there with his content.
How did they react?
Well, I only talked to the interns and the secretaries at the front. So that is, you don't get a lot there. They say, okay,
Sure. They're
I'm gonna
just
pass
saying,
this.
I'm just taking, I'll pass it on.
You don't get a lot from that. That they'll say, I'll give it to the judicial person or whoever handles the judicial questions. But I went tried to focus on congressmen and senators who are on the judicial committee, that were on the oversight committee. Those are the prime ones, and that had constituents that I could put on the front page. So I personalized it, say, you have constituents. These are your constituents affected, so that they could say, ah, I have reason to pay attention because I'm representing these people. And I didn't want like 20 people from Texas. I tried to scatter it. So, and I did one or two on the budget committee because budget was a big thing the last couple of weeks.
And have you been able to do any kind of follow-up with them? I mean, is that a thing that can be done, like text them
Well,
later and say, like, hey, did you get my two-pager?
that's one thing I'm going to ask all of you to do is I've s sent a list of all the people. Offices I contacted. Some of them got this three-page flyer. Some of them got the three-page flyer with a full three reports in it. Two reports were written by me, one on manufacturing criminals, one on wiretapping, and the third one is by Stephen Coker on how to plant evidence. On that list, the senators and congressmen that were highlighted in yellow got the full report. Because I thought they were the most important people to hit, but I couldn't. I'm hauling this stuff around in a backpack, walking a couple miles in 90-degree heat. So there's a limit to what I could deliver.
Oh,
So
hundred
sometimes a
percent.
flyer is all they want. So I wanted to make sure it was an attention getter flyer. So that was the front page. But I did hit 60 offices
Wow.
with some
So,
form, and a dozen of those got the full report. All of them all.
now that you've delivered all these things there, it would be helpful, I suspect, for each of us who lives in the district of one of the people you visited to say, hey, Bonnie
Yes.
Burkhart visited your office last week and gave you this. What do you have to say about this? And as constituents, they should
Please
be able
do.
to answer.
And
So, okay,
also
so.
call everybody on the list because sometimes your person is not on the oversight committee or they're not on the judiciary committee, so they don't have any power to do this stuff. So you're saying call everybody on there because they have some importance relative to you. So even though, Kennedy of Louisiana, I've got the entire Bossier Parish in his area. Okay. They're doing tons of wiretapping in Bossier Parish. If that affects you, say, this is going on in your district. And I hit them because it's happening there and it's affecting me. Would you do something? Call them because they are on the oversight committee. I'm calling you because you're on this committee and that committee. And call the
And
district.
if someone's on a committee, are they sort of expected to talk to people even if they're not in their district? Is that like under?
I believe so, but you can tell them there's other people in your district also affected. I am also affected because everybody I contacted has people in their district affected.
Of
So
course.
tell them that I am someone affected just like people in your district. And Bonnie Burkhart brought you a flyer on June 30th and called their DC office.
All right, well let's you and me after today, let's type up something with, the addresses of all these
Okay.
or the names of all the people you visited and who's in which committees and, phone numbers. We can get some information about all of this.
Okay. Sounds good.
Let's type that all up and send out a like, hey, here's some ways that everybody can help.
All right. I'm going to stop sharing if that's unless somebody wants to see this. Okay.
Okay, and people are asking can they see these slides and can they see this flyer? In the thing that we send out to everyone where we say like, here are the people you should be calling and here's what you should say. Can I attach a copy of the flyer and the things that you passed out at the
Sure. I think with the slides, I'll just delete my phone number though off the front.
sure.
Okay.
But you are
Otherwise,
offering, yeah. So I know that at the very beginning you said something about like, here's my contact information. So let's put that in the chat for people.
yeah. You're welcome to pass my email around to anybody and share that with
Okay.
anybody, but the phone number, I would request that
Totally
you
read.
keep that just to your members who viewed this tonight.
Sure, yeah.
Or if
Okay,
somebody
so.
you trust that wants to call me personally, but I really don't want my phone number
Yeah,
flying.
well, let's tell you what we'll do, everybody. If you personally want to call Bonnie, just reach out to me, and you know, if I know if you're one of my board members and I trust you and you were on this call, we will share that.
Yeah, I don't
Okay.
mind anybody calling me. And
Okay, so.
there's a lot of people who contacted me. And if you look behind here, you can see all the files on the bottom. That's a folder for I've got like 100 some odd people, guys who've mailed me from jails. So I have to do my best.
So I know that you have testified in trials and
Yes.
said in a trial, all the stuff that they're doing is illegal. Do
Well,
they?
there's a limit to what I can say, okay? Because I'm not an attorney, so I can't say anything about law, okay? I can't say this is violating this statute. I can only say they did umptifrats, and then the attorney has to come in and tell the judge, and that means this statute was violated. So I like write up questions for the attorney to ask me, and then I give complimentary or commentary for them to say that complements what I testify. But it's the attorney that has to make the legal argument because I'm not allowed to say anything about law. Okay. So that's one of the shortcomings of
But
me.
when you go in and work with the, because I know you've testified, you've been an expert witness in cases. When you go in and say that, does anything ever happen? Like, do the judges ever say, oh yeah, we better throw this one out? Or do they always
I've
just put
only testified, been in court and testified in what, three cases? So
and was it helpful in any of those three cases? Did you make any did the person get a better sentence or a lesser sentence, or does anything? No.
well, in the first case, I testified because it was a solicitation case, and I found out that the officer only had half the conversation because the guy actually contacted the same ad twice, and the officer only caught one of them. And then managed to remotely delete all the messages off the guy's computer because all the emails were gone from his computer from the conversation that he had. But I managed to find the prior conversation with the same officer that he didn't realize it was the same person. So I put that up there. The defense attorney said, "Oh, and by the way, this conversation started a day earlier, and the officer didn't say that." And it's 2.5 years later and he can't get his evidence straight. So it was thrown out because of that, but not because of the illegal interception and impersonation stuff. So,
So you did get one case thrown out, and then how about the other two that you testified for? Did you? Because it sounds like the judge just says, "Well, yeah, they did some illegal stuff, but like they caught a bad guy, so that's all we care about."
it didn't, the judge, I went on, I had like an hour testifying about Freenet that I wrote up questions for and didn't get any complaints from the prosecutor. This is an inappropriate question or anything like that. And the judge was just tuned out because they thought it was very technical and boring. And he said, "Yeah, I think you said something about wiretapping a while ago." Like, really? This is the judge that we have? But I wasn't
Wow.
allowed to use the word wiretapping, even though that's what I do. That's a
Wow.
legal decision. You can't say wiretapping. Like, really? It's a technical term. So I'm trying to explain what the words mean in the law. But anyway.
Wow. Did you talk to all senators, or were they some?
About a third were senators and two-thirds were
Okay.
congressmen.
Names of all the legislators. I'm just calling them legislators.
Yeah, so.
Wow. So yeah, I mean, it sounds like it's just mostly been your one voice saying like, this is wrong, this is wrong. So maybe we just
Yes.
all need to say,
I need a
wait,
lot of
what?
voices. So please pound them. Get all your relatives to call. Call everybody on the list, everybody, and at the DC office and just make a fuss because I need voices. And I've given personal presentations to Sheila Jackson Lee's staff, Democrat, and also Jim Jordan's staff, Republican. Both of them were very interested in having me testify if they have congressional hearings. So ask for congressional hearings because they need more than, but Sheila Jackson Lee has since passed, but her staff people that talk to me are like, I haven't talked to any congressman, okay, or senator, only the staff. So the next step is to bump it up to like the judicial people and then get an actual congressperson involved, because how you sell this is it's wiretapping. You don't get the keep the word sex out of it, okay? It's wiretapping. It's impersonating other people. And if they can wiretap for this, you have a nonprofit organization that has in cahoots with all the email providers, and they are wiretapping for anything that the NGO wants, okay?
Well, and you know, hopefully we get in there. They're also they're trying to frame senators and politicians. So
yes, they are.
Y'all should be scared of this.
When they take out, they just took out a Minnesota local senator, state senator, with this same thing in early January with a solicitation thing. And lots of times they'll invent the text messages or add them later. So it's got this, it smells the same. Steve and Coker actually contacted them. They want us on the case, but I have not included that because I have not seen any documentation to give me comfort and credibility that that is going on. Okay. But that is one thing too. Okay.
Yeah.
So they will take out politicians, and Congress is scared of the FBI right now.
Yeah.
So that's one of the issues, is that they are scared and they don't want to tackle the FBI, but the FBI, DOJ, National, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, are all in on this. And then they are training the officers. I have the court, I have the training manuals, and there's one copy internal DOJ, which I got from another wiretapper. I don't even know his identity. And the last page is section 13, which has all the laws you violate, including computer fraud and abuse. You can't use enticement, inducement, all this other stuff. That page is ripped off before they give it to the officers when in their training.
Wait, what? They take the "this is illegal" part off before they train?
Yep. And then they add in a table of contents. So the page count's the same. So the second page now is a table of contents, and then everything is shifted. So it has the same number of pages, but the last page is missing.
Wow.
So okay, somebody up there is training these people and intentionally
to break the law, intentionally training them to break the law.
Intentionally training officers and agents, both local officers and FBI agents, to violate the law.
Wow. Yeah, we need to get this. So someone asked in the chat, like, send out a template of what to say. Yes, I think I would like to make this as easy on people as possible, because, you know, if you just say, like, you just tell me all this stuff and then I'm supposed to figure out what to say, that we'll let's write it up so that it's easy for people, because
right, because you have to have your 30-second elevator speech, okay? Mm-hmm. Because before I enter a door, okay, I have my one piece of paper or packet ready to go in my hand. I have everything else in my backpack. I've got my backpack ready. My coffee is not going to be spilled. It's in the corner. I did spill coffee a bit on the floor. I won't say it. And you have to be ready to go, because as soon as you open the door, you have 30 seconds to hand them a piece of paper, say something, and then you're out the door. Okay. Yep. That's how I could hit 60 offices over four buildings with seven stories, is
yep.
because that's as much time as you get, and you get the same amount of time on a phone call. So
yep.
my, you know, we'll have to work on framing something that people can talk about. And you might have one for
yes.
solicitation. You might have one for child porn, because they're kind of different stories, but I'm sure you have people here that are affected by both.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We do. Absolutely. We do. Okay. So this isn't going to go out tomorrow, because doing this work is going to take us a minute, and we got things to do. I'm sure everybody has things to do every day.
I can give you slides in that, and you can ponder what you might want to say in your 30-second speech. Mm-hmm. All of you.
And I'll, yeah.
And
if anybody's got some free time and is willing to work on this, we can make a little subcommittee of people to kind of help write this up.
Yeah, you know. I'd say write two flavors of it. So
I would love help. Oh, wait, John, you got a question?
Yes. Bonnie, have you already done this, or would you be considering coming up with something along the lines of that flyer you had, maybe like a trifold brochure in which you boil down all of the information that you've shown us this evening, but boil it down for say maybe a the equivalent of a proactive summary. This is what could happen. And you have references for more information, for references to the court cases, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Contact, da 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 da. Something that would, again, without going into the technicalities, the jargon, everything else. Is that something, once again, that you have done? Is this something that you are in the process of doing or would consider doing?
I have a two-page letter, cover letter that went with this. So it's two sheets of paper, with the letter being like double-sided. So take a look at that. It kind of boils it into a nutshell with a few names, but see if that scratches the itch. But I've tried, once you start listing statutes, you have to explain the name of the statute because nobody knows what the number means. And then you have to say interception. This is impersonation is a variation of interception. And when it's hard to say it in a little bitty space. That's
Yeah,
one of that's the
that's
big
where you
issue.
would come up. That's where you would come up with saying for a full information, for full detail, see this
Click this
or go to
box or
this.
something.
Yeah, just a brochure, something that would catch public attention and perhaps to be as proactive as possible for people who are, all of us and more, likely to get sucked into a situation like that.
There's a lot of us. There's a lot of us. Okay, someone asked in the chat, just curious, does any of this correlate to what and how Doge and Musk got personal info from the IRS, SSA, and others in regard to US citizens?
I don't see any correlation.
All right, and then there are three new questions. Oh, someone asked, where did you say this list is? But I don't know what list he's talking about. Craig, if you want to raise your hand, and if you remember the list you asked about at 8:15, raise your hand.
The list of senators and congressmen, is that the list?
Oh, probably. Is that
Okay.
correct,
Yeah,
Craig?
I can send it to you in an email. And
Craig says
I can
yes.
send you the longer version that already has phone numbers, some phone numbers, so you don't have to look.
So we'll try to get this all together. And again, I'm not sure I'm going to get to this tomorrow, but we will get to it eventually.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. It's the whole this whole thing is just shockingly like, how is this legal? Well, it's apparently not legal. They're just doing it anyway.
Well, and the problem is they started this in Bedford County, Virginia, which had old judges who went to school before ECPA was passed because it started in 1998. So they were out of school, out of college more than 12 years. They aren't up to date.
They're not reading
And
them.
then they established a lot of precedents, erroneous precedents, because, oh, looky what this is, you know? And nobody knew that the Electronic Communications Privacy Act laws apply. I talked to defense attorneys and they're just, how do wiretap laws deal with sex crimes? This is a local case. Why are you talking wiretap? Because these two types of attorneys, you have
They
attorneys who
don't
deal
know.
with weapons and spy systems, and you have attorneys who deal with local petty crimes and shoplifting, and they don't talk
They
to each
just
other.
don't know the difference. Yeah,
They don't know
they don't
that.
study enough. Yeah, the
No,
law is big. The law is big and it's
they
changing all
don't
the
cross.
time.
They don't understand the nuances and they think, well, you can't wiretap a wireless phone, so there's no wiretapping here. And the judge said, well, you need a third device to do this. You know, it's like throwing a football. You need another player to intercept the football, and there's no third player. The officer was operating the phone, but he was an imposter. An imposter is not a person.
So mostly you're just smarter than most of them, and you understand the laws in ways that probably most of them are
Right. I mean,
not really understanding the law, because they're
I
complicated laws.
exactly.
They're
And
complicated laws, and your brain is full of all this information, and most regular people are not.
I'm not a lawyer, I just train them.
Oh my. Okay, well, I don't want to keep anybody over. We're two minutes over. Thank you, everyone. Beverly, yeah, let's work on this. And if anybody else is interested in helping out, just typing up the words and figuring this out, Let me know. My daughter's coming in town from DC next week, or no, Philadelphia now. She lives in Philadelphia. She's going to be here all week, and I'm super excited because I don't see her very often. So I can't make any promises that I'm going to get anything done right away. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you,
Save
everybody.
the chat. Save the chat.
Oh, yes. Let me show you how to save the chat. So up in the chat, there's those three dots at the top, and they say more. You click save chat, and that way you'll have like Bonnie's contact information and all the things in the chat. And there we go. All right. And I will send out her slides. I'll send out her two pager. I'll send out all the things eventually. All right. Love you all.
Thanks for having
Bye.
me.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for all the work you do. Good gravy.
Well, you're welcome.